You're listening to the best of the Jason Rant Show.
Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
So as of last week, and this is based on the latest amount of data that we have available for a full week at least, Seattle and King County Public Health received nearly 150 complaints from people about businesses that may not be complying with this new vaccination mandate. Now, when you go ahead and complain about something like this, when you actually take the time to connect with King County, Seattle Public Health, complaining that some business, whether it's a restaurant, a bar, a gym, or a movie theater, didn't ask for someone or everyone's vaccine passport. When you complain, we call that a narc. And what do we think about narcs, children? Boo! We don't like them at all.
Narcs get stitches, Jason. That's the saying, right?
Well, it rhymes. It can't rhyme with stitches because that's a bad word. So narc get. I'll figure it out at some point. But I think you're on the right track. I've heard something similar to that. Now, this is a story that was picked up by both Como and Caro 7 TV. And with a tepid exception, all the people that are featured in both of these stories are people who support the vaccine passport system. There was no one really complaining, not really. There was no one saying, this is outrageous. I find this to be asking for too much. I don't want this in my community. I think it's unfair. I'm vaccinated. You should trust me. None of that. So by both of these reports, I guess I understand that 150 complaints have come in because everyone loves the idea. You folks in Algona, oh, you love it. Those of you listening right now in Maple Valley, Bellevue, North Bend, you love this idea. You want more of it. Let's talk to a random dude who talked to Como TV.
I just feel like I feel included in there, that they care for me.
They care for me, he says. Now, according to Como, this guy drove from Snohomish County into a restaurant in King County just so he could feel safe, not realizing that even if you're vaccinated, even if you turn in a negative test within 2 days or 3 days, you can still catch and spread COVID. It won't be as severe if you're vaccinated and you get it. That's good news. But I feel like he might have a somewhat false sense of security in the context of, even if he were to get COVID, my assumption is he doesn't suffer from a severe underlying health condition, because if he did, he probably wouldn't go out at all right now, not yet. He would want to wait until that number of vaccinated people hits the 200% that Inslee is hoping for. How will he get that? Don't know. But will he stop any of these policies until he gets there? No.
208%, by the way.
Is it 208?
Yeah, it went up in the last 24 hours.
If you want to be specific. Brian was enjoying a night out in Ballard on Wednesday. He spoke to Cairo. And he's saying, look, it's so simple to ask for the passport, and it's so easy to hand it over.
Most people ask if they can see your vaccine card or like a picture of it.
Whether that's going to be on a phone, whether that's a paper copy, whether it's been laminated. I mean, there's just so many different options.
I mean, whether it's been tattooed, whether you've got a carrier pigeon flying it over in case you left it at home. Maybe you have smoke signals that are putting it out there. But sometimes if I'm being honest, I drew mine. I hand drew mine. I signed it. And, you know, my drawing is so good that even the little scan is on there. We were able to get that there. So you can scan it.
The QR code?
Is it a QR code or a barcode for this? Whatever the code is, I was able to do it. Yeah.
Oh, good job.
I mean, you could have it on your phone. You can have a physical copy. You can get it laminated. There are all so many ways that you can do it. It's so easy. Okay, good for you. Good for you. I'm glad you're calling out these businesses. You see, those irresponsible businesses, those evil businesses, they are not doing it the way they're supposed to. They are not listening to the mandate of King County Executive Dow Constantine. For shame. For shame. Obviously, this means that we've had, based on these 150 complaints, some of them are multiple, so let's just say 90 to 100 restaurants getting hit or businesses getting hit. clearly we will have seen evidence of some kind of surge of COVID cases at these locations. That's my assumption. Now, they haven't actually provided any of that evidence yet, so I don't know if it's actually resulted in anything beyond simply saying, well, they might not have asked for someone's passport. I'm not even sure. I think that's what I saw or what I didn't see. So maybe we should do... Okay, fine. Now, Ira Munch, he's the general manager of the Woodblock Restaurant in Redmond. He's bragging to Como TV saying, I'm not getting any complaints. I would never get a complaint. Why? Because I love this vaccine card, passport, whatever process. I love it. I'm all about it. It's so easy.
People come up. We just ask for either a proof of vaccination or, you know, a negative COVID test within 72 hours.
I mean, it's that easy. I mean, sometimes, you know, if it's late at night and someone's coming looking like they want to hook up, we'll ask for an STD test as well, maybe. No, you don't do that, only for COVID. But the other stuff that can lead to serious complications, health complications, and not even be potentially cured, depending on what it is we're talking about, that's something different. We're not going to pay attention to that. Got it. He just seems happy that he's not getting too many complaints. He gets a few.
Hey, we'll get some nasty emails once in a while, but, you know, overall, I think, especially in this area, it's pretty easy.
Yeah, it's so easy. Even a caveman can do it. Don't be the person who complains. Be the person who chooses not to go to that restaurant if it really matters, or go to that gym, or choose not to go to that movie theater, whatever it happens to be. I've never felt, I don't think, I'm trying to think back if I've ever done anything like this, but I don't think I've ever felt the need to rat someone out to a governmental agency other than calling 911 if I see something that's blatantly illegal.
You never seen a rat in a coffee shop and been like, you know what? The health department.
No, the thing is, let's say I saw a rat in a coffee shop. Perfect example. I just wouldn't go back. I might. This was before, if I was doing not a radio show. This was before a radio show. I just wouldn't go back.
When you were a normal person?
When I was a normie. But now that I am an elitist who's on the radio, I would talk about it. I would write about it. There's no doubt. But I've never complained about a lack of some sort of, I don't know, basic bit of service that's supposed to occur. Now, I've certainly made a deal out of people who wanted me to make a deal out of it, right? Like, there's two different groups of business owners. The ones who are so egregious, they are begging for something, right? That I don't think I've ever been in that case, but there are some businesses that are so over the top in how little they pay attention to just even basic safety standards. A toilet is in the kitchen. That's so weird. That kind of thing. Okay, I would totally rat that person out, or hope someone else, I would take a photo first. The other ones are the ones who come up with policies that are intended to earn your ire. We talked about this earlier this week with Windy City Pizza, where they decided to put out their policy saying you shouldn't eat anywhere if you are unvaccinated. I'll call that out because that is asking for a response. That is a political position that they're taking, effectively. But something like this, what's the issue with you just not going back to the restaurant? I know that you think you're saving someone's life, right? This idea that I'm saving lives because if you're unvaccinated, you're killing people, even though none of the data actually backs up that claim. But other than that, why would you do it? And by the way, if I was one of the businesses that was getting caught, or had the potential of getting caught, I might talk to a TV network about how stringent my rules are. I'm just throwing that out there. I just might do an interview and be all like, oh, I would never do that. I'm on top of my game, stupid. I mean, you don't have to be here anymore with the camera on. You can leave now. I gave you a really, that was a good comment, right? That was good. Okay. Yeah, okay. You don't have to be here for the people are coming. I got to pay attention to the rush. Again, it's not because I don't want you taking a photo of me or a video of me not checking people's passports, but, you know, I have to pay close attention to checking everybody's passports. And you being here makes me nervous. You ever heard of something called pee shyness?
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Okay.
I don't suffer from that, no.
Yeah, no, and I definitely don't either. I'm not going to now be able to go to the bathroom for 3 hours because I said that. They have vaccine passport shyness.
Yeah.
And I totally, believe me, I get it too. Colin, for example, he's the GM at Sasquatch Strength Gym in Bellevue. He's doing God's work. He's a hero.
We want people to feel like it's a safe place for them to come and take care of their health. It's all about our members and taking care of them. That's one of our core values here.
Do they still have to wear masks, though, at these? Oh, they do? Okay. So I guess it's not really just about feeling safe, because if you feel safe, why wouldn't you be able to take off your mask? Just in case someone has COVID? Is that what it is? Okay. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text.
You're listening to the best of the Jason Rant Show.
What's trending? A Jason Rant exclusive.
Well, there's some irony in this story that I broke last night. If you don't follow me on Twitter, well, correct that mistake in judgment, and then you'll see all the stories I break after hours when I'm not on this show. There's some irony in King County workers who work out of the King County Courthouse building in downtown Seattle / Pioneer Square needing security just so they can leave their place of work without getting harassed or attacked. There's some irony in this. And that Seattle has become so dangerous that King County government is now going to have security escorting employees to their buses, their trains, or their ferries for their commute home. They announced yesterday in an internal email that I was able to obtain something called the Walking Bus Pilot Program. A walking bus. They say it's a walking bus because it's a group of people that get together, and as they walk their routes, people get out of the group and get into their mode of transportation so they can get home. The reason why they're doing this is because it is too dangerous for them to walk alone or even walking in pairs. The buddy system does not protect you from the overtly aggressive and sometimes incredibly dangerous homeless population that the city of Seattle allows to continue to take over downtown and Pioneer Square. So this group will meet Monday through Friday. It starts on November 15th, so next week. The group will meet Monday through Friday throughout the afternoon for different walking sessions. One will go to the King Street station, which isn't too far away but is especially dangerous, so folks can get on the train. And others will get to go on that other walk, which goes to the Coleman Dock and has different ferry stops along the way. And of course, when you have a bus along the way, you go in your group, and once you get to your bus stop, you depart the group, and you get on the bus only to be harassed by some homeless guy on the bus. Now, in addition to this, you could always just call the security line over at the King County Courthouse. This is being done through one of their departments, the Facilities Management Division. You can call them and say, hey, I would prefer not to get stabbed in the face like that guy did the other day as he was walking his dog near Occidental Park. Could you just walk me to my bus stop? I'd really appreciate it, especially the bus stop right around the courthouse, because there are lots of homeless people who just kind of hang out there. A lot of them are dealing with mental health issues, and we don't necessarily know if they're dangerous, but we've all seen some of the videos of people getting randomly sucker punched by people who are living out on the streets that we're supposed to pretend shouldn't be put in jail or put in a facility. Got it. Now, of course, in this case, the group is meeting at the 4th Street entrance, not the 3rd Street entrance, because the 3rd Street entrance has been closed because it's too dangerous for people there because of all the homeless people. So they're meeting at the 4th Street entrance to the King County Courthouse. Now, even though this announcement that I got a hold of doesn't actually indicate whether or not these security escorts will be armed, it certainly seems unlikely, because security within the department who actually work on site, on the premises, they don't get any weapons. No guns, no handcuffs. They carry pepper spray, and they wear a bullet-resistant vest. So they get the bullet-resistant vest because the bad guys might have guns with bullets in them, but they won't benefit from actually getting a gun, a handgun of their own, or even some sort of club that they could use, a baton that they could use when they need to. Now, this has been an ongoing complaint, by the way, from the security over at this Department Facilities Management Division within King County. They said that they face a dangerous disadvantage because while they're patrolling, if they ever encounter someone who's a criminal who has a weapon, what are they supposed to do? Just call it in. Well, as they're calling it in, how many people does that person shoot or stab? Hopefully, we don't have to find that out. So this walking bus pilot program goes into effect next week, next Monday. We'll see how many people actually take it up because we've certainly seen the polls over the last several years, or surveys, I should say, of employees there complaining about how dangerous it is. Understand the irony in that this building is filled with judges, many who are great, some who are not, and many prosecutors, some who are great, some who are not, who go easy on the very criminals that end up harassing and attacking their own employees once they leave the office. That someone goes in front of them, a repeat offender, a prolific offender who's been in front of the same judge maybe dozens of times for the same crimes, sometimes escalating crimes. And the judge or the prosecutor goes easy, says, oh, okay, you know, go seek treatment, and then that's what's best for you. And of course, treatment is best for a lot of these folks, but they don't get it. There's no mechanism to force it on them. And so what they end up doing is being released. And while you're being compassionate to the prolific offender, that prolific offender continues to commit crimes and create more victims. So we care more about the prolific offender who refuses to get help than we do about the innocent civilian who's just going about their day trying to get to work on time. That it's this unsafe around the county courthouse should embarrass the city of Seattle, the prosecutors who work in King County, and the judges. But it doesn't. And to be clear, unfortunately, unarmed security isn't going to make that much of a difference. You have homeless people in that area who can be unpredictably violent. And I mentioned that guy who got stabbed over at Occidental Park by a homeless person. He was just out walking his dog, ends up getting stabbed in the face. And at the time, he pleaded with the city to do something. What did the city do? Nothing. The council member who represents this district, his name is Andrew Lewis. Andrew Lewis said, well, you know, we don't execute any services to help the crisis. We just, you know, we come up with the budget priorities. We do some oversight. Uh-huh. You're the one who helped lead the cause to stop sweeps. Now, in that case, the mayor gave in and ended up deciding, okay, I'm going to stop sweeps. She shouldn't have, but she got pulled into it. It was politically untenable for her not to, and she's a political coward. So let's talk about, as he said at the time, he goes, the council sets the budget priorities. Okay, the budget priority right now is to cut Seattle Police Department by nearly $11 million more. This will result in dozens of officers being let go. On top of that, it results in dozens of officers, potential officers, looking at a job screening saying, oh, I thought there was an incentive bonus. Oh, they took it away over at the council so they can save some money so they can prevent people like me from being a little bit more interested in getting this job, knowing that it's already a horrible job to have to take on at this point politically. Okay, I'm out. I'll go work in Kent. I'll go work in Mill Creek. SPD currently operates under 1,000 deployable staff. That explains why violent crime has been trending in the wrong direction in this city. Last year, a 26-year high homicide rate. This year, we're just shy of meeting that number last year, but hey, still 2 months left. It is absurd. The city, the size of Seattle with this crime, is supposed to have at least 1,500 or so officers on duty. 1,500. We've got under 1,000. Something like 948, 950, something like that. This is embarrassing, but no one seems to be embarrassed. But they do acknowledge there's a problem. They're just unwilling to do anything about it. King County Executive Dow Constantine could say something. He could say the crime rate is out of control. We have to be ensuring the safety, not just with security escorts, but with actual police officers who are patrolling our neighborhoods. And I understand that you guys don't have enough staff to do the proactive policing. How about you put more money into the budget? Dow Constantine would never say that because he, too, doesn't like cops. And at the King County level, that's what we're going to start seeing with this new council. Remember, we're not going to have an elected sheriff anymore. So a sheriff who maybe wants to fight on behalf of his or her law enforcement deputies and the staff that go with it. That's not going to be a reality. They're going to pick someone who's a rabid anti-police activist, maybe with some law enforcement experience. Doesn't mean they're not going to be anti-cop. And they're going to make this county worse. So that's how this impacts you. For those of you who don't go into downtown Seattle, believe me, I get it. I don't want to go into downtown Seattle or Pioneer Square ever. I go there because that's where the Fox studio is that I use for my hits. Which, by the way, I'll be on primetime today if you want to watch that, youtube.com/JasonRants. So understand that those of you who are listening right now are like, oh, I am so glad I live here in, I don't know, North Bend, Duval, Carnation, Bellevue. It's hitting you, Shoreline and College Lake and Kirkland too. Understand this impacts you. This impacts you. And that's an unfortunate reality. For now, momentum is on our side. We're going into the midterms, but let's be clear, that's a year away. You are listening to the best of the Jason Rand Show on this Thanksgiving week. Happy Thanksgiving. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
Today is Veterans Day, and there's one person who I can think of who knows what it's like to fight on behalf of veterans. Her name is Tiffany Smiley. She is running for Senate here in the state of Washington. She's challenging the incumbent, Patty Murray. Tiffany Smiley joins me now. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Jason. Thanks for having me back on.
You know, the topic of fighting for our veterans is one that we talk about constantly. We always have conversations about whether or not the VA is doing enough, whether or not this country does enough to support troops when they come back. But for a lot of folks, it's just out of an appreciation for our military. For you, it went beyond that. It hit home personally.
Yes. Yeah, you know, 16 years ago, our family's fight really began when Scotty was serving in Mosul, Iraq. He was supposed to be there for an over a year-long deployment, and all of that changed on April 6th of 2005, you know, when I received the phone call detailing the horrific news, you know, the news that every military family dreads, and it was that Scotty, in service and defense to our country, had come face-to-face with a suicide car bomb and was negotiating with the bomber. And Scotty raised his M4 and fired two rounds in front of the suicide bomber, and he detonated his car, sending shrapnel into both of Scotty's eyes. Not only that, you know, on this phone call, the commanding officer proceeded to tell me that they, you know, one thing they were certain of is that Scotty would never see again the rest of his life. The shrapnel completely obliterated both of his eyes. The second thing they weren't sure of is if he would survive. And in that moment, you know, Scotty didn't know it yet, but he gave his eyes in service to this country. Our family sacrificed his eyes in service to this country. And, you know, Scotty was willing to volunteer and go on the front lines along with so many other men and women in our armed services to go on the front line, volunteer Army, volunteer Navy, volunteer Air Force, and put it out there for us. I mean, they fought for us, so I will always stand up and fight for them. And, you know, that's when my real fight began. And I saw sort of behind the curtain in the bureaucratic government system and how we were treating our veterans. And we have a lot of work to do, but I will never stop fighting for them.
And it feels like for a lot of folks, they say that, but then don't follow through. You're someone who saw it and you followed through. The people who serve in the Senate, like, for example, Senator Tom Cotton, who knows a thing or two about these issues, also follows through. He just endorsed you today.
Yes, he did. And you know, it's such an honor to be endorsed by Senator Cotton. I worked with him on some of this legislation. In one of my speeches with him a few weeks ago, I said, you know, he always took the knock on my door. And not only that, he sat down and he always listened. And I can't say that for everyone that I would meet with on Capitol Hill. But Senator Cotton did. And not only that, this, you know, horrific events in Afghanistan that our nation has gone through in August, Senator Cotton was right at the front line in helping getting our allies, Afghanistan's out and Americans out. I was in touch with his office from the very beginning, helping get friends and allies out, and his office was set up and ready and successful. And so I am honored to have Senator Cotton's endorsement. I'm grateful for his leadership as a veteran to this country, and I look forward to working hard with him to win here in Washington State and to work with him in the Senate.
What's the first thing you would do in office on this issue?
Well, you know, number one, there needs to be accountability and transparency. I mean, the VA gets billions of dollars. So we have to start asking the hard questions of why isn't this really serving our veterans, and is there a better way to be doing this? So number one, I would focus on accountability and transparency. The taxpayers, we owe it to the taxpayers to know where their money is going and who it is serving. Number two, I would work very, very diligently on addressing the mental health crisis within our veterans. The suicide rate continues to go up. Mm-hmm. And while it's not often a sexy topic to talk about in Congress, it's the right thing to do. And it's absolutely necessary. So it's absolutely the top two that I would get to work on right away.
Just joining us, I'm talking with Tiffany Smiley. She is running for Senate here in Washington State. She is a candidate who actually has a chance at taking on Patty Murray, and that's the first time we've said that in a very long time, because we've had previous candidates who didn't really sort of walk the walk. But Tiffany Smiley does. Her website, by the way, is smileyforwashington.com. It's all spelled out, smileyforwashington.com. Do you think the VA is too big? Is that part of the issue? Because we always hear the conversations about bureaucracy, and bureaucracy comes out of massive agencies. Is the VA too big to serve?
Yes, it is. It is very, very big, and it's clear that, you know, it's easy in that situation to pay lip service to the sacrifice of our men and women, and too many of them are not given the support and the opportunities that they earned and deserved. So we need to, like I said, you know, it comes down to accountability and transparency as our government. We need to know if our processes are working, right?
Mm-hmm.
Measure them. Let's
Absolutely.
Start to measure if our processes are actually working and delivering. You know, if the VA was a business in the private sector, it would not be in business anymore. So that says something, right? Let's make sure that we are delivering to the customer. I will never forget when Scotty, you know, was beginning his rehabilitation and we're 23 and 24 years old. We have our whole life ahead of us. Scotty just lost his eyesight in service to our country. I had resigned from my job. We had student loan debt. We had car payments. And we're trying to get back on our feet, and we get to the VA and they offered him cassette tapes. And I remember feeling like they are not prepared for our future.
Mm-hmm.
They are archaic. They were not prepared for a 24-year-old to come in here from a blast injury. And so in those moments, those are the pieces that I started to put together. And as a nurse, I naturally take a holistic approach. So in some ways, I gave up my nursing career, but there was so much more to fight for. And I am still being a nurse. And that's how I saw it. That's how I took on VA reform and fought for our veterans every step of the way, because it is necessary. And a nation that forgets its defenders will itself be forgotten. And I never want to see that happen on our watch. And I want our children. Scotty and I have three amazing boys who they know why their father is blind. If you can imagine the conversations that we've had to have with those three boys. At various levels, you know, in their mm-hmm. development to what they could process. But we've had to say that their father is blind because a suicide bomber looked him in the eyes in Iraq in service to our country and tried to kill him. And instead of killing him, he took his eyesight. Scotty's never seen our three kids.
Mm.
And they at certain points, they've grieved and cried and realized that something was taken from them as well. But also, that is the reason our family fights every single day.
Yeah.
And they know why their mother is fighting for the United States Senate. They know that our country is not free without veterans like their father. And so, you know, though heartbreaking, it also sets a level of precedence in our family that we will always stand up and fight for what's right, because their future depends on it. I want to have a country in 10, 20 years that my children, that for them, that it's worth losing their eyesight for. So we will never stop fighting and standing up for our veterans. And today, I think if there's any veteran listening, thank you for your service. We are a grateful family. We will always fight on your behalf. And just thank you so much for your selfless service. And, you know, as we look to the future, I think it's clear that we need servant leaders in Congress on both sides.
Yeah.
And so I look I look forward to getting to work.
Yeah, and I want you at work so badly, because just hearing the passion that you bring to the table, the ideas that you actually bring to the table, we know that you would do an amazing job in Senate. We just got to get you there. And so for folks who want to help get Tiffany Smiley to the U.S. Senate, make sure you visit her website, smileyforwashington.com. There are different ways you can help out with the campaign, including donating to the campaign. It's an expensive race. Smileyforwashington.com, S-M-I-L-E-Y, forwashington.com. Tiffany, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Jason, and happy Veterans Day to all the veterans past and present and those that are currently serving. Thank you so
Absolutely.
Much.
Absolutely, and please make sure that from the Jason Ranch Show and KTTH, you wish your husband, Captain Scotty Smiley, a happy Veterans
Thank
Day
you.
As well.
I will. Thank you so much.
You're listening to the Jason Ranch Show. You are listening to the best of the Jason Ranch Show on this Thanksgiving week. Happy Thanksgiving. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Back the blue.
Cops in Linwood are being taught jujitsu as part of the attempt to reimagine policing. We'll push aside any claims, which I'm actually surprised I haven't heard of cultural appropriation, and look at this and say, well, that doesn't seem really as good of an idea as people might think. I'm actually struggling a little bit to understand this particular approach in the context of policing. Chief Jim Nelson of the Linwood PD spoke to Como TV. And he said, basically, we're looking to give another avenue for officers to go down if they're trying to de-escalate a situation. Now, I don't know if a jujitsu battle will get to de-escalate anything. It actually seems like it would piss the other person off a little bit. But okay, let's hear him out.
Your mind kind of can shut down and it goes to, you know, strictly in a protection mode. And we want to keep our officers out of that as much as possible.
Okay. About 90 Linwood police officers, or employees, I should say, because it's not just officers, they're actually adding command staff. They attend 2-hour classes one time every month, and they'll do it for the next 2 years, which seems like a really long commitment. Could you not have just done it all done in like a week and a half? You have to spread it out.
I don't think you can master jiu-jitsu in like a week and a half.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say you probably can't master jiu-jitsu when you're only doing it once a month for 2 hours.
I'm
just throwing that out. I'm throwing that out as a reality. But he says, the chief says, look, when this is all done, we will analyze the data. We'll figure out whether or not it's actually effective. Now, what data would you be analyzing? I don't know. What would be deemed a success? How would this be deemed as effective? I do not know. They do not say. But I don't know if it's realistic to say, well, we're going to look at the data and it turns out, hey, look at that. Use of force with anything other than jiu-jitsu is down 17%. Jiu-jitsu is up 17%. That's how we made the arrest, jiu-jitsu. Now, it's fully funded through their training budget. So beyond that, they're not getting anything extra for it. Apparently, this is the only department in the state of Washington, at least, that is mandating this kind of training.
By and large, you know, after the academy, that training diminishes significantly. And it's a perishable skill.
What's the level of diminishing or let's say memory retention of jiu-jitsu after a month of doing one course?
I think you should go on a deep investigation. You should do jiu-jitsu once a month, Jason, and see what you can retain.
There are officers who like this. Officer Brooke Silveira says, for example, that she loves the idea of getting a new skill.
It's a good way to add another tool to the toolbox. It's just another option besides force.
Fair enough. I mean, it is force, but what she's talking about is potentially deadly force, obviously. Did you watch the video package attached to this?
Yeah, of course. I was very interested in the story.
I'm going to test you then, because there was one thing that kind of just jumped out at me. What were they wearing while they were doing the training?
T-shirts? I don't know.
A sweatshirt?
Yeah.
What else?
Sweatpants?
Yeah.
Some athletic clothing?
Kind of stuff you might go to the gym and work out.
Yeah.
Especially this kind, because you're touching people. You don't wear shorts or anything. What weren't they wearing?
Their vests or their utility belt. Is it called a utility belt?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay, I just didn't know if it was a
fine.
Batman
police
thing.
Belt
or,
fine,
okay,
yeah.
Police belt. Their big boots.
Yeah.
Sometimes their flat-brimmed hat that they wear if they're state troopers. You know,
they're not. This is the Linwood police. But
maybe the Linwood police likes the flat-brimmed hat.
What else do they not have on them at the time?
Their gun.
Okay, what else?
Their baton.
And what else?
Their...
Come on.
Handcuffs.
Yes. What else?
A taser. Pepper spray.
Oh, there you go. Okay. So, a lot of stuff is not on their body while they're doing the training. Now, perhaps that comes down in the, you know, month 17 2-hour session, how you do this with the with all your equipment and uniform on your person. Does that... I don't know that much about jiu-jitsu, but I know some about jiu-jitsu. And usually you're taking people to the ground. And in this case, it might require a little bit of finesse in movement, not just a full sort of body slam the best that you can. It just seems like if you're doing true jiu-jitsu, that stuff might get in the way.
So do you think like a kickboxing class would have been more appropriate?
Well, you can't kick people or punch people anymore because of the rules, because society has changed. Okay, fine. Krav Maga makes sense. Because Krav Maga, if you're not familiar with it, you basically just flail your arms and you fall into the person and that's how you win. That's basically Krav Maga. There just seems to be other ways than getting into some MMA-style fight with someone to get them to submit. I got him in an arm bar, but this gun is hitting me right... Ow! It hits... Ow! It's going into my chest! No, that's the baton, too. Where are my hand... How did my handcuffs fall off? It just feels like this is the wrong way to do it.
See, and I'm with you. I think that they should be doing the training in their vests, in their boots. It's the same thing with the NFL Combine. Those guys,
yes.
They do it in spandex. They should be doing it in pads and a helmet to see what their actual speed is.
I feel like that would be a little bit more realistic here. And again, my point in all of this is not even necessarily to say it's a bad idea. You listen to the report. They say they've got some new bonds. Camaraderie is being built, which is totally valid. And hey, look, they're getting into better shape. Consider this them going and doing their cardio for the day or the lifting for the day, so they don't have to go to the gym that day. But my fear is, as we have these conversations about moving away from traditional styles of police force, is that are you putting cops in positions where they're going to second guess whether or not they should use this jiu-jitsu style takedown of a suspect versus what they would normally do? And when we have these conversations, understand that officers are making decisions within a second or two. And I don't want them having to think now, hey, let's do the jiu-jitsu arm bar triple kick in the head thing. I wonder if that's going to be the right move and the safe move long term. And I don't know the answer to that. And maybe cops will say, and you can feel free to text, obviously, you know what? No, Jason, this is... the way we start our training, the way we think about training, doing it over a 2-year period, even if it's just 2 hours a month, actually will get us to train slightly different, think slightly different, and our muscle memory will be a little bit different. And those split-second decisions we make using a gun or a baton, we can easily do that with the jiu-jitsu. So I certainly concede I could be wrong. It just doesn't seem like I am.
Their instructor is a 19-year police veteran, so, I mean, I think he's got some good...
Is he doing jiu-jitsu in the field?
I mean, maybe he was before he retired.
1-800-465-8770.